You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us today is Richard Dick Schwein, Sr. He is the former special agent in charge of the FBI here in El Paso. He's been retired now for how many years, Richard?
I've been retired now for over 17 years, Louis, a long time.
Wow. That's incredible. And the FBI continues to function without you.
The FBI continues to function very well without me.
Okay.
No one is irreplaceable. Although my son, as you know, is an agent. And
Yes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the award that you and your son got, because you're the first father-son team to ever get that.
Yeah, we both hold the FBI Medal of Valor, which is the highest award the Bureau gives for conduct or actions against an armed adversary. In my case, it was a shootout in northern Ohio a long time ago. And in his case, it was the attack on the embassy in Yemen, in Sana'a, Yemen, when he was the FBI agent, the legal attaché assigned to that embassy. So, and we are, so far, the first father and son to be awarded the Medal of Valor.
Now, as far as your career, Dick, when you started, you're native of Cincinnati, and you graduated from the University of Cincinnati, and then you spent 40 years in the FBI. As you mentioned, it's been 17 since you retired. Time flies. But tell us a little bit about when you first started, and what made you get into this?
Well, actually, I got into the FBI a strange way. I was going to a small Quaker college in Ohio studying to be a history teacher, actually. And they had a work-study program, 3 days in school and 3 days in a factory, and a recession came along, and no more work, no more tuition money. But the FBI at that time, this is pre-computers, of course, recruited all sorts of young people to be clerical employees at headquarters in Washington because there were vast amounts of paper to deal with. So I went off to Washington, D.C., at age 19, and in my 1951 Studebaker, and became a clerk to the Bureau. And they, in those days, if you went to college and graduated and could pass the test, they would then promote you to agent. And they made me a tour leader, which is where I met my wife, Florence. She was a new employee, and I took her and her family on a tour. And we've been touring for the last 53 years together. So,
did you let her drive the golf cart?
No.
No, you didn't have those kind of tours.
We did not.
No.
It was the old Justice Building in Washington. It was a fun job, actually. But then they transferred me to the Cincinnati field office, and I graduated from the university there and was commissioned an agent in 1967. And Florence and I and our two little children were off to Birmingham, Alabama, my first office. And that was a year's tour of duty. Right out of the academy, in those days, you did 1 year in your first office. Of course, this is when Mr. Hoover was the director. And FBI agents weren't particularly popular in parts of Birmingham, Alabama in 1967, but we had a good year. And at the end of that, we transferred to Philadelphia, and I spent the next 7 years working on the violent crime squad in Philly, bank robberies, kidnappings, things like that, which I enjoyed thoroughly. And then they made me a supervisor, and I had the truck. We called it the truck squad, which interstate transportation of stolen property, jewel thieves, art thieves, truck hijackings. And then I was sent to headquarters and did my tours through the Hoover Building and headquarters, and then to Cleveland as the assistant special agent in charge, and back to Washington as an inspector. And I had some interesting experiences there. And then to El Paso for 7 years as agent in charge, and I enjoyed that more than anything else I've done in the FBI. And I finished with my last 2 years in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Because you met the Bonnie and Clyde of El Paso, Louie and Norma, correct?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now tell me about, you said it was a hotbed in Birmingham, and of course it was a civil rights movement, all the stuff going on there. Tell us exactly how difficult was it to work there?
Well, most of us, the Birmingham office in those days was rather small, and most of the agents were right out of Quantico. We had a few seasoned veterans, but most of us were northerners, right out of the academy. And, of course, this is in the era of the civil rights marches, and I had been there a few months when Dr. King was assassinated, and we were all assigned to that case because James Earl Ray, who was determined to be the assassin, lived in Birmingham, Alabama, purchased the murder weapons in Birmingham, Alabama, so we had to try and find him, although he had left Birmingham. And in those days, there were no computers. For example, being a rookie agent, several of us were assigned to look at all the hotel, motel, flophouse records to try and find James Earl Ray under one of his various aliases. Well, today you'd click on the computers and it would search for you. In those days, it was every piece of paper had to be hand-searched, so a long, long process.
It's interesting, as we approach the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy, the fact that things changed a little bit after that, because it's kind of, I'm not sure if you want to call it ironic or some people are surprised that even though we had already had three presidents assassinated, it was not yet a federal crime to kill the President of the United States.
It was not. Other federal officers, it was a federal crime, but it was not a federal crime to kill the President until after that. It certainly is now. An FBI agent, if killed in line of duty, that is a federal crime, or a U.S. judge, or nearly all federal officials, but not the president. But it is now, of course.
And, of course, everyone was involved in this, the Secret Service, a bunch of police officers, of course, the whole city of Dallas. Did you play a role in some of this as well, Dick?
At the time that happened, I was in Cincinnati. I was the night clerk. I manned the office at night, and on Sunday, in fact, I had a weird shift. 2 days 4 to midnight, 2 days midnight to 8, and Sunday days. So I was on duty in the office when, with the television on, when Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald. I picked up the phone and called the agent in charge in Cincinnati and said, "Guess what?" So because the entire FBI was on alert, that to determine was this alone, was he alone assassin, or was there a plot against the government? There's always, those things always come up. Of course, there's still conspiracy theorists out there.
Oh, sure, sure.
And there always will be.
And we're going to talk about your books in just a minute, but I'm sure that people are interested also in your career and what happens behind the scenes, et cetera. In your mind, what is a case that stands out, that you remember, that you always remember?
That I worked on? Well, there
yes.
were several. Of course, working on the assassination of Dr. King will always stand out. But as I went as an agent in charge to Los Angeles for the riots after the Rodney King thing, and I had the midnight to 8 command in Waco for that debacle with the Branch Davidians, which is just a horrible thing to have to do. And I worked the Jonestown Massacre when I was a young agent, where 900 American citizens died in Guyana, or committed suicide, actually. Those things stand out, but then the other individual crimes stand out. I had a bank robbery, which I attributed the solution to the church. Four people took a family hostage, a banker's family, three young guys and an older man, and we had not a foggiest idea who did it for months. And so I'm beating my head against the wall. Well, the leader of the gang was an Irish immigrant. He was driving around City Hall in Philadelphia. He ran into a carload of nuns, and he had a conscious attack. He was helping the nuns out of the car when a policeman saw a pistol sticking out of his belt and grabbed him, whereupon he said, "You better call the FBI. They want me for the kidnapping bank robbery." That would solve my case, so I attribute that to a conscience. So sometimes they're easy.
Of course, with as we're talking about books here, and we're going to talk about Kindle books, which a lot of people, you know, if you said Kindle or e-books a few years back, people would go, "What are you talking about?" How has the FBI changed since you joined, and of course, as far as the technology and the social media and all that stuff? Does that get in the way of investigations, or does it make it more difficult for you all to investigate because people can hack, people can get into the computer and post just about anything they want?
Well, they can, and it goes both ways. FBI agents now have access to all sorts of data banks that they wouldn't have had many years ago. The computer's a wonderful thing, and you can search all sorts of things on it. And people put their whole life out on these things for whatever reason. But it's sort of alien to me. When I retired, that was all new. The social media just getting underway. But each FBI office now has a cyber crimes squad, because cyber crimes, the fastest growing criminal activity now. You don't have to go in a bank with a gun. You can break into their accounts and take the money out over a computer.
As you mentioned in the email that you sent me, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and with kiddingly, the fact that you did what all law enforcement officers do when they retire, and that's turn to writing. Did you always have an idea that you wanted to write a novel or wanted to start writing at some point?
Well, towards the end of my career, I thought I'd like to try to write a novel. I never had any desire to write an account of my actual activities in the FBI. I had a good career and took an oath and served as well as I could. So I'm not really big on what they call kits and tell books. But I thought I'd like to write a crime novel. FBI agents, whatever else they do, they write. I mean, you write from the day you walk in till the day you retire, but you have to train yourself to stop writing government write and write interesting novels. If you're going to write a novel, it's a whole different thing.
Tell us a little bit about this character you created, Ben Douglas.
Ben Douglas, he's a figment of my imagination, of course, and he is. It's based on an FBI agent's career. Of course, a lot of the things I did or worked on, I write about those type of things. It's all fiction, and he does things probably that FBI agents really might not do. But I try to be as accurate as I can in portraying how investigations were done in the 70s and the 80s, and how they're done at the time I retired and even beyond. For example, DNA didn't exist as a forensic tool when I started, and it certainly does now. And it was developed during my career, but now is in full bloom, of course.
Now, as far as the books themselves, you have five out now. Do people have to read these in a particular order, or can they start anywhere?
They can. They're on Kindle in order, chronological order as best I could. Actually, I've written about, I think, 11 now, but only five are up. You write a book, it takes maybe 6 months or longer, and then it has to be revised probably two or three times until you're satisfied, and then you can publish it. Of course, Kindle or e-publishing has changed the entire world of publishing, because anyone can do it. It's cheap to do. You don't have to worry about obtaining an agent, which can be almost impossible. And if you're good enough and people like your work, they'll purchase it, and it's a relatively inexpensive way to buy books. I love my e-reader.
One of the ways, Dick, is the fact that sometimes, whether it be Amazon or some other people, will offer deals where you can download the book free for a day or two. And it's almost like a teaser, so because people like free things. So they download it, and then they get hooked, and so they go and look for other works that you've done. And I saw quite a few good reviews on the pages and people who have read your books.
Yeah, well, I'm pleased. Yeah, I had a free teaser out, and I think 450 or so were downloaded, including I think 80 in the United Kingdom, which is sort of strange, but that's good. The Brits want to read about our crime novels. God bless them.
Now, tell us a little bit about the current ones that I saw anyway. And you said you have about 10 out, but
I,
only
I
five,
five.
Only five,
five
are,
out. 10 written. How's that?
Okay. Ransom or Reward, towards the end of the Vietnam War, that's when that takes place, correct?
Yes, it's a kidnapping that takes place in Philadelphia, where I was working at that time. The kidnapping of a wealthy heiress by a radical group, which was not an uncommon happening in those days, and how the kidnapping was worked and the ultimate outcome of it.
What about, tell us a little bit about the other ones.
Ransom and Reward, that's Ransom and Reward, of course, the name's self-explanatory. The next one is Robbery in Progress, and I like that one because I worked bank robberies for 7 years. Robbery in Progress takes place in Philadelphia once again, and in this case, the twist is a group of young bank robbers, teenagers actually, headed by an older guy, a Fagin-like character. They rob a bank in Philly across the house from the head of the Philadelphia Mafia. The bank's, his house is across the street. A capo is in the bank, and they shoot and kill the capo, and a war erupts between the bank robbery gang and the Mafia, with the Bureau trying to apprehend the bank robbers and keep the peace. So it's got a lot of twists in it, and I just thought that would add a little spice to it.
There's one that you wrote shortly, I guess, I'm not sure if it's shortly, but after the death of J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, it's called The Squad, and once again, it takes place mostly in Philadelphia, and it introduces female agents, which we never had and desperately needed long before we had them. And they had the first female agents had a tough time because it was an all-male culture. I think we had two female agents in Philly, actual female agents, and the first two in the FBI, one was a Marine officer and the second one was a former nun. And one of them at least stayed for a career and retired. But now there are I would suspect about 1,500 female agents, including special agents in charge and assistant directors. And they're fully integrated, and the kids go through Quantico now. They don't care, male, female, makes no difference. But it did in 1973.
It's interesting that you talk about that, because some people, when you talk about female agents or minorities, et cetera, they talk about, because these kind of characters were introduced in television and in radio dramas way before this came into reality. And critics say the reason that they were accepted was because people saw them as not real, imagination, like Candy Matson on radio, or, you know, policewoman Angie Dickinson, et cetera, Stephanie Zimbalist, and then some of the other police, so Cagney and Lacey, et cetera. And they said that the reason they accepted again is because these were not real. Do you agree with that? Was there a big change as far as once the female agents got introduced?
The first female agents we had tried to be too much like the guys, and that didn't work out so well. So then they became themselves, and they do very well. They do just as well as any other agent. And the reason we needed female agents, think of this, we would arrest a female. Now you can't search them. Ah. How do you strip? A male can't strip search a female, so we had to find a policewoman or somebody, at least a female deputy marshal. So that solved one problem for us. And once females were integrated, and it's just like minorities. When I started, we had very few minority agents. And Mr. Hoover passed on, and the whole thing changed, and for the better as far as recruiting good people.
Dick, why do you think that it's, you know, people thrive and have an interest in crime and drama? A lot of the radio dramas in the 40s and 50s were about crime and drama. Broadway Is My Beat, the FBI, Dragnet, etc. And then some of the novels that are coming out, James Patterson, the lady Cornwell, Patricia Cornwell.
Oh, yeah. And so both of them avidly.
So why do you think there's so much interest in crime thrillers?
Well, I think because it's in the news all the time. People see crime and violence, and it's interesting, and they get a curious thrill from reading these things. We know that the leading books sold are romance novels, and they have all sorts of subgenres, and crime second. Crime and thrillers are second, and that's what people buy. They're not great, always great literary novels, but they sell. And Tom Clancy's a perfect example of that. He sold millions of them.
Exactly. As you said, a lot of people are interested because they want to know what's going on, and they're not cookie cutter novels, because those, everyone knows how they're going to end. Everyone knows what's going to happen. And the danger, Dick, and tell me if this is correct, sometimes people find that you might get put into a niche or into a little pigeonhole. You know, the fact that, okay, Dick Schwein writes about this, and that's all he writes, etc. And then some are very successful.
Yeah, well, that's true. But you're taught, or I was taught, you write what you know about, and I know about crime. I don't know that I suppose I could try to write a history novel, but I don't know how successful I would be. I sometimes think I'd like to try and write something else. But I know about crime and how to put twists into that type of novel. And there are all sorts of twists in the criminal mind. So,
how often do you sit down at your computer and, or do you just take notes and then keep them and sit down later and write them?
There are two ways to write novels, I am told. One is to outline the whole thing from the start and fill in the blanks. I cannot do that. I write, when I start a book, I start it like a case. I have a crime and some characters, and I build on it, and I try to solve the case as I go along. And sometimes I don't know where it's going to go until I'm well into it. And sometimes when I'm through, I read it and say, that's not right, and I have to go back and revise it. But I never outline.
Dick, have you found out that also that a lot of people get attached to these characters? For example, the Gunsmoke series. A lot of people were concerned, why don't Marshall Dillon and Miss Kitty, you know, have a romantic affair, etc.? Well, because, you know, yes, and I have all the radio versions as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it changes the story completely.
It does. In Tom Clancy's case, his main character, Jack Ryan, became president. I believe in his last novel, his son is now the president.
Exactly.
So I haven't read that one yet. I'm reading some of the later ones right now. But if you write, you should read. And they will tell you in any writing organization. By the way, I belong to the El Paso Writers League, which is over half a century old, and we enjoy visitors and we enjoy members, and we meet. Can I give it a plug, the Writers
League? Sure, go ahead.
We meet every second Saturday of every month at the Doris Van Doren Library on the Red Road from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And generally speaking, we will have a speaker who's knowledgeable in one of the areas of writing, poetry, fiction, memoirs, and so on. And I think the dues are now about $20 a year, and we encourage new members, and we have a good time, and we have a yearly writing contest. So, I've enjoyed it thoroughly. And we have some good writers here in El Paso.
What is your take on audiobooks? I just read an article recently, I believe it was the New York Times. Audiobooks are coming back, and some people are relating them to the old radio dramas and the fact that they can listen to a book. They're too tired to read. You know, their eyes hurt, so a Kindle won't work. But somebody reading to them relaxes them.
Actually, most Kindle books, or many of them, can be, they're converted to
the whisper voice?
To voice. You can plug them in. I haven't done that, but we listen to books when we travel in the car. A good novel will take you a long way down the interstate.
So. It sure will.
and so we do that frequently.
Let's talk about your most recent book, and that is The Daughter of the Devil.
The Daughter of the Devil is, that's the last one published. It actually takes place in a small town in Iowa where an FBI agent is in a shootout off duty, and it turns into a cult, a satanic cult that he gets involved in. And Douglas, who's now an FBI inspector, which is a rank, is sent out with a team to find out what happened. Is the agent guilty of murder, or was he set up, and so on? And it devolves into dealing with a cult. And I, in my career, dealt with a couple of them, and they're hard to deal with, frankly.
How's that, or can you say?
Well, yeah, sure, I can say. For example, in Waco.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Waco, that was a cult, and the people there, unfortunately, for whatever reason, believed he was the Almighty, so you couldn't reason with him, you couldn't negotiate, so, and that's tough. Same thing in Jonestown many years before the Jonestown Massacre, and Americans killed in South America. They believe that Jim Jones was the Almighty, and when he said, drink the potassium cyanide, they did. It was terrible. And so dealing with that type of, the FBI now has, of course, a behavioral science unit at Quantico, which is quite effective, and it's added a lot to the abilities to negotiate not only with kidnappers, but with these crazy cults. So they've been pretty effective over the years.
Now, as far as doing the research and finding out more information about this, because you've dealt with all of this, I would imagine that it's a little bit easier for you than someone who has never dealt with this, because there are some authors who it takes them literally years to do the research, because especially if it's a nonfiction book.
Oh yeah, they're much harder, I would think, because if you're writing fiction, you have a lot of literary license. I mean, you can change things the way you want to change them with the villains and the protagonists and everything. But if you're writing a biography, you better be accurate. But the computer has made research so much easier, as you well know. I mean, you can all sorts of search engines where you can get valid information. So,
Dick, is there a rule about, like, writing about topical things and fads that catch on? Because right now it seems like there are a lot of books out there about terrorism and bio attacks. I just started reading one called Pox, and it's about, you know, where this group from the Middle East comes over here and they're going to release Pox on the city buses.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's of course, that's a real concern of people in my old business. Biological attacks are feasible. They haven't happened. We hope they never do. But one of my unpublished books is called Bioterror, and that is the theme of it. So it deals with the Ebola virus, actually.
Uh-huh. Dad, Norma and I read one about that.
There's several out.
The Hot Zone. By Richard Preston.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a nonfiction book.
Yeah.
But anyway, as far as getting your books, they can go to Amazon.com. Would that be the best?
Amazon.com. If they have a Kindle, they're up there. They're reasonably priced, and hopefully there'll be some more up there. And I think they're decent, but that's up to the reader to decide whether you're good or you're bad. That's the nice part about it. If you don't like it, you hit delete.
And the good thing about Kindle, in case you don't have a Kindle, is the fact that you can take a sample, just like Costco or Sam's, and if you don't like it, you can delete it, and if not, you can keep it. And so Richard Schwein, it's S-C-H-W-E-I-N. Just type that in when you go to Amazon.com, and you'll see the books that he was talking about, and the most recent one, again, is Daughter of the Devil.
Daughter of the Devil. There are five. That's the last in the five I have up, and hopefully in about three more weeks there'll be another one put up.
Dick, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We've been visiting with former special agent in charge of the FBI, Richard Dick Schwein, who is the author of various books. The most recent is Daughter of the Devil. And you can go to Amazon.com or other search engines and just put Richard Schwein, type in. That's S-C-H-W-E-I-N. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.